In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome to another week of iSpy Radio, giving you a little more intelligence on big government. On this week's show, the sinking ship that is Oregon's healthcare system. I'd like to start by giving you a quick reminder of what Oregon has done to its healthcare system. We have Obamacare, our very own version of it. Obamacare could disappear tomorrow and we'd be stuck with Oregon's Obamacare. This was done by design by former Governor John Kitzhaber and Oregon's Democrats and some Republicans who did not understand what they were voting for. Under Oregon Care, we now have a massive bureaucracy at the top called Oregon Health Authority. Under that, we have a series of regional monopolies called CCOs, Coordinated Care Organizations. CCOs coordinate all things healthcare, payments, insurance, healthcare, mental health care, etc., etc. Antitrust laws were actually waived in order to set these up because they were given monopoly operating powers. How often do monopolies lower prices? Republicans were duped. They were lied to. They were told CCOs would provide better care for less money. Here's what they weren't told. These have never worked anywhere in terms of better care for less money. Under CCOs, there were going to be a whole new series of bureaucrats, health navigators, community health workers, and on and on. Think of Oregon's healthcare system as a series of nesting dolls. You, the patient, are at the middle, and the doctor is on the outside of those dolls. Between the two of you are all those bureaucrats and agencies. You don't just simply go to the doctor anymore to pay for a service. That's what it used to be, a straightforward transaction in exchange for services. Here's a very key point. Remember, when you give the government control over your healthcare, under socialized medicine, also known as universal healthcare, you give some government bureaucrat control over your life. Why? Because they have a legal and financial duty to make sure that you cost the government as little as possible. So what's been the results? Well, that's today's show. And we're going to talk to our healthcare industry expert, Lisa Lettmeyer, in a moment. But here's something. That healthcare tax that we just passed in Oregon a month ago, they are already reappropriating those funds and spending it on things they never told you about when they lied to voters about that tax. And while the rest of America is getting tax breaks, Democrats in Salem want to take away some breaks and raise taxes on small businesses, except for two industries. But you'll have to hang around for that and a whole lot more on today's show. I'd like to welcome now Lisa Lettmeyer. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. You can find her at healthsourcenw.com. Lisa, it's great to talk to you again.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
It's kind of sad in some ways because it seems like the only time that we have you on is when there is an implosion about ready to happen within our healthcare model. And sure enough, we're looking at the CCOs this week here with you and also the larger healthcare market. But it just seems like a lot of the things that we had predicted years ago when these CCOs first started coming on the scene are all coming to fruition. And so I'd just like to kind of run down through some of our predictions and just get your feedback on how close we came with some of these. And so one of the big ones that we started with was that at the time, we were being told by Republicans, oh, the CCOs are just for Medicaid. Don't worry about it. It's just Medicaid, which is kind of odd because if they'd actually read their own bill that they supposedly had read, but they certainly voted for, it said very clearly that CCOs would not stop with Medicaid. And so we predicted that it would not stop with Medicaid. It would sweep up Medicare, state workers, and eventually all of us because we had, in fact, read the bill. This, of course, was an attempt to head into universal health care. And again, we had read the bills and discussion of it because if they had read the bill, it said it right on the first page that the intention was to get to universal health care. So what are your thoughts on this? How close did we come with our predictions here?
Well, given the fact that there is currently, it's already passed out of the House and it's sitting at the Senate Health Committee, it's House Joint Resolution 203 that basically wants to amend our Constitution to make it so that every Oregonian is required to have access to cost-effective, medically necessary, affordable health care. Mm. There's no plan attached to this. There's no price tag. And when you have a government saying, that they want to provide cost-effective and medically necessary, those are code words for somebody in the government's going to dictate what that is.
Yes.
Not your doctor.
Yes.
So that's where they're working on right now, again, in a short session, as we talked offline, which is interesting because we shouldn't be doing anything major in a short session, but that's already out of the House. It's in the Senate Health Committee. If it makes it to the floor and passes, that would come out to a general vote in November. So it's a matter of educating people on what that really means. In the meantime, the CCO program, at least, you know, this is not my world of expertise on the CCOs, but from what I can see, aren't doing well because one of the two biggest CCOs here in the Portland metro market closed its doors on January 31st.
Yes.
And one of the main reasons was they were getting paid about, what, 8% less than their counterpart. So Family Care shut its doors on January 31st, leaving just HealthShare really predominantly for the Portland market. And all those people are being rerouted to one of three different CCOs. There's also legislation.
Isn't that kind of suspicious in some ways? Whether it's intentional or not, it's still the same fact. But isn't it kind of suspicious that here one of the CCOs gets shut down and is going to be consumed by some of these other CCOs? You're slowly lurching toward a system where you do only have one provider.
Well, and as you say that, there is currently, I think it's still kind of percolating out there, it's LC-25, it's called a CCO reform. Rep. Mitch Greenlick has proposed some revamps to the CCOs, one of which, one of the bullet points, is he wants to go back to allowing a statewide CCO.
Wow.
So if we remember correctly, right, when the CCOs were presented, I believe we were given $1.9 billion from the feds, Kistopper was given by the Obama administration, to revamp our Medicaid system here in Oregon and show how we could do it so much better and save all this money.
Yes, that's
However,
right.
We're not saving money. Our, the Oregon Health Plan is struggling financially. It had an audit last year that it failed miserably. We found out that there was 100,000+ people that hadn't been vetted correctly. And of those, when they went back and did that, over 40,000 shouldn't have been on the Medicaid system. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. There was other areas where they failed their audit. We've got a CCO closing its doors because it said it just can't make it work. There's not enough money to provide services like they're supposed to. And now they want to go back. Instead of having these multiple CCOs around the state serving each area of the state, for those group of people, because it does differ, right, from Eastern Oregon versus Portland versus Southern Oregon. Now they're proposing to bring it back potentially to one umbrella.
Wow.
So we spent all that money, and what did we accomplish?
Yeah.
Would be
well,
my question.
Yeah. And when you look at the supposed results, which is supposed to provide better care and everything else and on down the list, they're just failing miserably. Another one of her predictions was that they were waiving these antitrust laws, and this would we predicted that this would lead to regional monopolies and remove the normal barriers between insurers and providers among some of these other people that you would normally want to keep at arm's length. Are CCOs taking over or working with insurers more than they properly should be?
So I don't know that I can answer that specifically, but I do know when you kind of watch what's happening out there, like we just all voted in the state on Measure 101, which was basically the voters had to approve taxes on insurance premiums and hospitals to help fund the Oregon Health Plan or the CCOs. And in doing that, it was interesting to, you know, there was lots of commercials for it, but there was big money coming from some of our carriers here in Oregon, like, for example, Providence and Kaiser and Pacific Source. Let's break that down. Kaiser is a hospital system / health insurance plan. Providence is a hospital system / health insurance plan. Pacific Source, in the last 2-3 years, they partnered up with Legacy. Legacy bought into Pacific Source. And those three entities also are heavily rooted in providing Medicaid services. And we also need to understand as residents of Oregon that as they put somebody onto a Medicaid, if they make somebody, you know, a Medicaid recipient, for every dollar that is spent by the state of Oregon for that person, I've been told by a couple of people, including my lobbyist for one of the associations I belong to, that Oregon gets somewhere between $2 to as high as $5 per one of our dollars based upon services being offered or the type of care from the feds.
Yes.
So they
right.
always look at this as free money. And yep. I always have to pull them back and say, free? because I'm pretty sure I pay federal taxes every time I get my payroll check.
Yeah, yeah. Is,
and at
isn't
the end of the
amazing?
Year, I pay even more federal. Yeah, it's not free money, folks.
No.
We are using money hand over fist that's coming out of our pockets, and we need to be better stewards of this. And as you said, you could also beg the question, are these people getting the proper care? A lot of times they can't get in to see the primary care timely enough, so they're still going to ER. I've had several people call my office to buy their family member a straight individual health insurance plan because their loved one couldn't get in to be seen or couldn't see the appropriate doctors on Medicaid.
Yes, that was exactly one of our other predictions as well, is that one of the ways they were going to save money was deny health care or deny access. Let's go and take a break there. Come back. We'll have lots more with Lisa Lettmeyer. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Lisa Lettmeyer of HealthSource NW Northwest. Her website is healthsourcenw.com. If you'd like to go visit that, if you're in the market for health, life, dental, disability, or long-term care insurance. Lisa is our expert on healthcare and the whole healthcare system. In particular, we're talking about the CCOs this week, and one of the things that we had gone out of that break with was one of our predictions on the CCOs was that they're going to save money by effectively denying healthcare in one of two ways. One, by limiting or discouraging access to health providers, or by substituting actual doctors with physicians, assistants, nurse practitioners, and other self-help. It sounds like we were pretty accurate on that, but you brought up something interesting during the break there in terms of if we do move over into universal healthcare, which is, you know, again, one of our predictions, it may open Oregon up to a ton of lawsuits. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, House Joint Resolution 203, basically it's a one-page bill that would amend our Oregon Constitution, making it so that Oregon is required to provide to every Oregonian access to cost-effective, medically necessary, affordable health care. But there's no plan attached. There's no price tag. And once you pass something like that, you actually open the state up to lawsuits because your definition of affordable might be different than mine or somebody else's, right? So where's the barometer? How do you gauge that? And how do you stop people from, quite frankly, moving into our state to gain access to health care and or suing our state if they don't feel that they're getting it timely enough or affordable enough?
Wow.
So I've even talked to a couple different lawyers who totally agree. This is just, it's a silly step for Oregon to take. They're basically putting the cart way before the horse. They have no plan other than, as you've mentioned in the past, they've kind of stepped around and talked about, well, we'll start with CCOs and then take over Medicare and public employees. But what does that mean? If I have Medicare clients and over half my client base is Medicare, a lot of my Medicare clients travel. So if you have a universal health plan here based in Oregon, does it travel with you? Because I can tell you that Medicaid doesn't. So there's lots of questions that need to be asked. When you're talking about access to care, you know, I want to be careful. I don't think that Medicaid or the CCOs have purposely limited people getting access. What happens is there are so many people on Medicaid, 1 in 4 in Oregon, that the primary care offices are flooded and they're not able to see people timely enough. And the primary cares have to, you know, in some capacity limit how many people do they take that are on private insurance versus Medicaid versus Medicare because their reimbursement rates are different. So there's a backlog. And so what ends up happening is people might end up end up going into the ER quicker.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said effectively they're going to that was the effect of what they were doing. It was going to end up limiting care. You know, it's frustrating listening to you. We're so focused on trying to give people universal health care. When, if Oregon was only doing what it should be doing, which is focusing on prosperity, make your citizens more prosperous, grow the business environment, grow people's jobs, and remove barriers to access for some of these businesses to come in here, lower taxes, so many things that we could be doing to make our citizens more prosperous. And if we were more prosperous, then guess what? We could all afford better health care. One of our other predictions was the amount of money spent would not decrease, but rather increase. And in other words, at the end of the day, we'd spend more, not less, on healthcare. Are people spending more or less on healthcare?
Well, I think the question is how much are you spending on health insurance? So if you are out buying your health insurance, either you're getting it through your employer has probably asked you to pay a bigger portion of that through your payroll, or maybe they've taken you to a higher deductible or out of pocket, or both. So yes, you're paying more for your health care. If you are buying an individual plan, I can assure you, because I've looked at my numbers, I keep all of my brochures from years past before the Affordable Care Act. We're now selling plans that are either double or triple wow. what the costs were previously, and it's lesser coverage, much smaller networks, and in a lot of instances, it's not even a PPO where you can go in and out of network and don't need a referral. Now the majority of our carriers have you in a very small network where you need a referral, and there is no out-of-pocket, or excuse me, out-of-network coverage. So you're effectively in an HMO. And again, these plans, in a lot of ways, people end up paying more, not just in their premium, but also in their services. So it's a hard question to answer, but in general, yeah, we're all paying more for our health care.
Yeah, surprising that when the government takes over something, costs do not go down. That's just kind of the rule of thumb. One of the other reasons that we thought that costs would go up was that there would be no means to actually, no effective means anyway, to decrease costs in terms of the price of services, while at the same time you're adding a whole bunch of people to the system. I think some of that is that the Dems just thought, well, we hear about making more money by having more customers, but, you know, of course, healthcare is not a service industry. It's not a manufacturing plant. It's a very different beast. You can't just add more patients. Somehow costs would magically go down. I guess my question here is, did we decrease costs either to the government or even to the cost per patient level? It sounds like certainly on the per patient, it has not gone down.
No, I don't believe so. And that's always been my argument, is that even if we look at the Affordable Care Act or CCOs, I mean, there was talk in there. There still is talk. That's how the CCOs work, is this idea of transitioning payment model, so away from fee-for-service over to an outcomes-based. But there's varying degrees of commentary on how that's worked or not worked. I always tell people, look at the actual cost. Like when you go in for a service or a surgery, what is the cost? Now I can use me as an example. I love when I can do this. I had some interesting stuff in this last year. I actually ended up with two partial knee replacements. Well, the second one that was done in December was done at Providence Willamette, and it was I was held overnight, and I was actually admitted to the room, right? So I was there for just shy of 24 hours. I checked in at noon, and I left at 11 the next day. And I had a surgery that lasted about an hour and a half. Of that entire thing, there was a $41,000 bill. My doctor, my surgeon, and his assistant got paid basically $1,600. Wow. The anesthesiologist made about $1,100. So the remaining, what is that, $38,000, give or take,
yes.
was just for the surgical room, the meds, the supplies, and
could
the
you just like
overnight.
Invited people over to your house and say, you know, I'll scrub down the kitchen and let's do it here. You could have saved $38,000. That's astonishing.
23 hours, an hour and a half surgery, and I was $38,000. My surgeon, who I thought wow. would get a big chunk, him and his assistant got $1,600.
Yeah, that's astonishing. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock. Coming back, we'll continue this with Lisa Lettmeyer of HealthSource Northwest. You can visit her at healthsourcenw.com. See you. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Lisa Lettmeyer, talking about CCOs and the healthcare system that is quickly sinking here in Oregon, lurching towards universal healthcare, if you heard the earlier segments. And so, Lisa, we've gotten a whole bunch of other predictions about the CCOs, and I think we're just going to quickly bullet point these. The cost of healthcare would rise, which in itself would be a barrier to healthcare. The cost of healthcare would go up because of the multiple new layers of bureaucracies and government workers between you and your doctor. That many CCOs would elect to become LLCs, private companies, which means that they could take public monies intended for the care of the poor and elderly, but could avoid public meeting laws or disclosure of money spent. And all of those came true. But one thing, though, that I will mention here in detail, though, is because it is so critical to understanding the whole system and why it's such a mess, is that they use a global budget. They take all of these monies and lump them into a single pot of money, which means that you've removed the ability to track these public funds that are supposed to be earmarked for individual patients. And then at the end of the day, the CCO is the one who gets to keep the money left over. So in effect, the CCO is incentivized not to provide care or to provide lesser forms of care or lower quality of care, make you see physician's assistants or nurses instead of doctors, because at the end of the day, they get to keep what they didn't spend instead of, oh, I don't know, the patient getting to keep what they didn't spend, which might actually cause them to take better care of themselves. So in effect, they are incentivizing the system to reward itself rather than provide care. So whether it's financial or otherwise, who's doing better, the system or the patient? Who's better off?
Again, this isn't always my area of expertise, but I can just tell you from people that have called my office to, again, buy a private health plan because their loved one isn't either getting timely enough access or not getting to the appropriate providers, whether that be mental health or some other specialist that they need them to see for whatever's going on medically. So, you know, given that a CCO closed its doors at the end of January, given that we had to rush around, the state legislature was panicked about how they're going to keep funding, you know, this budget shortfall for Oregon Health Plan. So just to kind of clarify for your listeners, Oregon Health Plan is our Medicaid system, but we've got the CCOs underneath that. There was effectively 16 of them, now down to 15. And what that does is it spreads out who's basically running the Medicaid program in each area of the state. So, you know, we had this huge shortfall, so they went through all this, you know, how are we going to come up with this money? I think it was almost $1 billion. One piece of it was a 1.5 premium tax, which gets passed down to the purchasers of premium of insurance, whether it be group or individual. Also, there was an increase on hospital taxes, and that was the piece that people were saying, hey, let's vote on this, and we did. But it's always interesting to understand, you know, here's the sky is falling, we need this money, everything's panicking, and then, oh, but we didn't completely earmark it just for Medicaid, because, for example, last week, I get communications from the insurance division. I get little different sources here and there. And one of the things that Oregon's being awarded that we're really excited about is we're going to be one of three states that's going to get some federal funding to help set up a reinsurance program to help stabilize our individual health market. Now, I'm all behind that. That's a good thing because we've seen these premium prices just escalate. But as I read further into the release and they talked about how we're going to fund this reinsurance program, there was funding coming from the federal award. There was money left over from the temporary reinsurance program that we had here in Oregon. There was an Oregon Health Insurance Market Assessment, which all the carriers pay in. And, oh, by the way, that new 1.5 tax assessment that we just voted yes on to help support Medicaid, that's going to be used to help this reinsurance program. So, It's always troubling to me to say for them to say we don't have enough money for this program when we were supposed to be doing it better than everybody else in the country because we were given special money to set up the CCO system in the first place. Yet when they do get the money and they have us vote on it and they show us all these commercials and this is why we have to have Medicaid money, and then we give it to them and then lo and behold, they're going to use it for a different program over here. That's the kind of stuff that I pay attention to and I get concerned about.
Yes, absolutely. And that, again, gets back to this whole notion of this global budget where they just dump all this money into this big, gigantic pot, give it a stir. You can't figure out where any of it goes. And when you don't have the ability to track money, it's amazing how much of it gets wasted. And so here you are saying what a lot of people had said about the Measure 101, which is what you're talking about, that just passed in January. And sure enough, exactly right, is that money is now being redistributed to all of these other different things. Since we're on that topic, I am flabbergasted to see that the Oregon Health Authority, I just love that Nazi-esque name, the Oregon Health Authority, they are actually investing in housing services. Why exactly is our health agency paying for housing?
Yeah, that's out of my wheelhouse. But I would imagine, you know, the concept, as you know, of the CCO was to look at the people in those areas and figure out what were health determinants, right? What was creating health issues and costing more and more money. So, you know, I can get behind that, trying to look at things from a broader picture. Why are we using those dollars for housing? I don't know specifically. That's, again, not part of my expertise. But we just need to have people paying attention to where the money is going, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And within that article, they're spending $21 million to put in like 358 units and whatnot. But it was interesting when I was reading that article, especially because back several shows ago when we had talked to you, you had predicted that the state really wanted to send some of these low-paid health workers directly into people's homes to evaluate their home and their lifestyle and their eating habits and everything else, all these so-called health determinants. I mean, what better way to do this than to actually control where you live? I mean, we are lurching not just towards universal health care, but I mean, we really are lurching towards Soviet Russia where the state controls the housing.
Yeah, again, I mean, you can look at a social program and you can totally be like, yep, I'm for that. But then you have to really pay attention. You have to see where the money is going and how many unintended consequences come from that, right?
That's right.
How far reaching does that program become? And this is why I like this show. We just need to ask these questions. There may or may not be something malicious going on, but we should ask the questions. One of the things I would encourage all of your listeners to do, our current Secretary of State, Dennis Richardson, did a big audit, was conducting an audit on the Oregon Health Plan. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it failed miserably, not just in one area, but several. And it was, we're wasting money, right? Money was spent that shouldn't have been spent. So when your legislator's coming to you and saying, we need more money for this program, pass this new tax, and in two things. A, they were misusing funds and mishandling it in the first place, and B, they're going to take some of that money that you just gave them for Medicaid and use it someplace else. So always, always asking these questions, getting into the weeds a little bit, and if you don't know or don't know where to go, you know, ask. There's lots of places that you can get some of this data. And just be more informed when you're making these decisions.
It's just shocking how much we are spending on this. And these CCOs and the whole Oregon healthcare system is quickly turning into the next education department, a giant black hole into which you cannot throw enough money. And welcome back. Talking about Oregon's healthcare problems here with Lisa Lettmeyer. She's the owner of HealthSource Northwest. You can visit her at healthsourcenw.com. If you are in the market for health, life, dental, disability, or long-term care. And I'd like to talk a little bit about this CCO that failed here in Oregon, just because I think it exemplifies some of the situation that's going on here. This is Oregon's second largest CCO. It was Family Care in the Portland area. Shut its doors, created a huge mess in Medicaid. And before we get into the details of why it closed, talk to us a little bit about some of the headaches that those clients are now having.
The majority of those clients will be moved over to the health share, which was the largest, I believe, CCO in the service Portland Metro. But there's two other smaller CCOs that some of them will go to. One, I think, is in Yamhill, and I can't remember the other one. But in most cases, they're assuming that the primary care will stay the same, but there are going to be some people that their family care that was contracted on family care, their primary care, may not be contracted on the new CCO that they get to. So they may there's going to be a group of people that are going to have to establish the new primary care, or maybe it's a specialist that may or may not be on that new CCO. So no matter what, there's a disruption that happens moving somebody from one plan to the next. You know, as an insurance agent, I have to work with my clients every year to review how their plan's doing, how the price is doing. And a lot of what we've done in the last 2 to 3 years isn't just on price and coverage, but network access. And we have had to move a substantial amount of my book of business from one carrier to the next just because of the networks changing. Hmm. And I can assure you, from a private insurance market, when I have to coach my clients to move plans to retain their doctors, or in a lot of cases this year, they have multiple doctors, and we couldn't find a carrier that covered all of them. So I can't imagine that this is going to have no disruption on those Medicaid patients, because just like my private pay clients, when you change plans, in a lot of ways, you've got to, you know, everything's got to change. You've got to get new cards and potentially new doctors, and that's a disruption. And especially that group of people, they typically, you know, are dealing with whether, you know, health issues, mental health issues, and the additional disruption is problematic.
Well, especially when you have a whole system essentially go down like that, where people, you know, had relied on it, just not for the doctors, but all these other aspects of it. And I know how difficult it can be sometimes just to find a doctor, and now you have to go through that whole headache again. And they act like, oh, this is no big deal. It never really costs anybody any time or money anyway, but it's just a major hassle. And again, it's what happens when government is in charge of these things. In terms of this particular CCO, it looked like they're being forced to close because they were not getting reimbursed at the same rates that somebody else within their same geographic area was getting. They were getting reimbursement rates of $377 compared to $409 over at HealthShare. That's a difference of about 8%, which may not sound like a whole lot, but they had already lost $100 million due to that discrepancy. And they said that they were going to lose another $75 million in 2018 had they stayed open. I think it's a little surprising maybe to hear that all CCOs are not reimbursed at the same rates. Do you have any insights as to why that is?
No, I don't. I do remember, I think it was The Oregonian, if I'm correct, that did an article last year where they had, you know, had gotten proof that I think it was three employees within the Oregon Health Authority that were tasked with coming up with a marketing plan to discredit family care.
Yes.
Versus health share. That's disturbing. You know, we're now paying state workers to come up with a marketing plan to discredit a carrier for all purposes, for a CCO, a care provider. Why? And why is there a discrepancy? And I don't know. I'm not an expert in that field. I don't know why there'd be such a discrepancy. But I had read a couple articles written by the family care that they're like, we can't make it work. The money that we're getting isn't allowing us to support the amount of people we have and what we need to get done.
Yeah.
So it's numbers, folks. This is not, you know, anything else other than just numbers, and we have to pay attention to it.
And then when you add into the equation, you've got government bureaucrats, as you alluded to, you've got these government bureaucrats who are picking the winners and losers. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Give us a little bit more time in the next segment. We're going to continue our discussion here with Lisa Lettenmeyer, and stay with us. We're going to be talking a little bit more about Measure 101 and some of the other issues that are now popping up. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking with Lisa Lettenmeyer. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. That's healthsourcenw.com. If you'd like to go visit her, she is an independent brokerage agent. Excuse me. And we've been talking about Oregon's health system here and about the CCOs in particular. Getting back to Measure 101, which was, of course, you know, passed under the whole notion of save the puppies, kids are going to lose their insurance, and you know, the usual things. But just to reiterate how offensive it is that Measure 101, they promised that they would need these funds for this one aspect of healthcare. And now, of course, as you've already said, is that they're now branching this out and they're going to use those monies being collected for these other things. I think that where that really begs the question then is where else in the system are we seeing these kinds of bleed overs? Do you get any indications of those?
You know, I can see it happening, but this is such a fast moving thing. And when you approve these taxes, the key is if you're approving something that doesn't have specific wording for a specific program, it can be used in the general fund, then you don't know ultimately where it's going to end up at. And we need to hold these legislators accountable. And what we're seeing year after year, session after session, is that the sky is falling. We need more money. We need more money for this and for that. And they keep coming back. How often can you come back to the pot to take out more money from our pockets? Or, as Dennis Richardson tried to show with his audit, we need to go back into these programs and we need to look at them. Where's the waste? Where's the efficiency or lack thereof? What can we do to improve these programs? Not take them away. You know, everybody says that if you're a Republican, you want to take a program away. I don't want to take it away if it's needed. I just want it to work like it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
I'm a recovering accountant. I worked my way up without a degree into a very high-level corporate accounting position before I left in 2003 to become an insurance broker. So my brain is numbers wired. And this is the kind of stuff that gets me revved up, when we're just throwing money at something and not watching it, not being good stewards of it, not being good consumers of it, well, not being told the truth.
Yeah, that's the thing. That right there is what gets me, is that we're not being told the truth when they market these things to people who don't pay attention to the issues. They're being deceived by these people that say, oh, well, we need money for the poor to pay for their insurance. But what they don't tell you is that, well, but that's also going to pay for all of these other things. I mean, that's really offensive. It's like,
yeah,
the gas care bill. I mean, or the gas care, the gas tax bill. They pass these taxes on gas that's supposedly going to help pay for roads, and of course, it goes for everything but.
More thing that your listener, I'm going to jump in and I apologize for interrupting you. One thing that I always try to remind people of and educate people on, when you're talking about putting somebody on Medicaid, it is incredibly easy to get put onto Medicaid pre-65 years old, meaning that basically the qualifications are you an Oregon resident, what is your current month income and your next month's estimated income, and if it falls within the guidelines, you're in. They don't ask you what your bank accounts are. They don't ask you what you own in assets or if you have any retirement accounts. None of that's considered. It's just your current and next month income, not your yearly, your monthly. Once you're on, from everything I've been told, for 12 months, and then you recertify. Now, my exact clients, right, who might be pre-65 getting some assistance, they turn 65, things are very, very different. At age 65, to start getting any kind of financial assistance through what we would consider a Medicaid program at the federal level, the first level is called LIS, Low Income Subsidy for Prescription Drug Assistance. They ask not just what your annual income is, not your monthly, now it's your annual, but they also want to know what your liquid assets are, your savings, your checking, your retirement accounts. So it's much more difficult for the elderly who probably need some assistance because now they're living on Social Security to get that assistance than it was pre-65. So that commercial for Measure 101 that showed the elderly woman in the wheelchair kind of irritated me a bit because I have lots of clients that need some assistance after 65 who can't get it because they're being asked not just annual income but assets. And yet we don't do that on our pre-65.
Why the change?
I don't know. It's how the program has been designed. Medicaid, remember, is a federal/state program, and that's the rules of the game. So we actually need to go back to the feds and say why. But I can tell you that there's some legislation being proposed right now to ensure that when we're looking at helping people out for temporary financial relief here in the state, the legislature's got some stuff going on right now where they want to ensure that we don't use any of their retirement assets, pensions, 401ks, IRAs, Roths, in determining that financial assistance. I would argue, and associations I belong to would argue, that granted, there's a threshold where you wouldn't want to maybe tap into that with them, but if somebody's sitting on a substantial amount of retirement assets, but yet you're not asking about that, that's probably not a good use of those federal and state dollars, right? So we need to have some form of means testing when we're talking about putting people on any kind of an assistance. And I've seen that as a broker, whether it's somebody going on to Medicaid or getting a substantial premium subsidy through the federal government, when in fact they actually have assets, but yeah, it's their monthly or yearly income that falls below that threshold. And look at that. Since they're not asked about assets, they get the assistance.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is they really ought to be asking those questions before age 65 as well. All right, everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Lisa Lettenmeyer coming back. We'll be talking about a new way that Democrats have found to punish small business owners. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Lisa Lettenmeyer talking about Oregon's healthcare system today. And one of the big things that's out there is that in the tax cut bill, Trump stopped the Obamacare mandate through the new tax cut law. What kind of impact is that going to have here in Oregon?
Well, first to clarify so people understand, the mandate is actually still in place through 2018. So the mandate doesn't stop until 2019. That's when you're not mandated to purchase health insurance anymore. The effect, I mean, the reality is when you're offering an insurance product with no underwriting or risk assessment, and then you disconnect a mandate, you can't have it both ways, which is never a popular answer, and not even for you, Mark, but you're offering an insurance product with no risk assessment, and now you're not requiring people to have it. So ultimately what happens is only people that need it or use it will buy it, which then drives the cost up even more. So that's unfortunate. I am a Trump supporter, but I don't know that was, rather than do that, there needed to be a bigger fix, right?
Yes.
We needed to have a bigger conversation and go back to an underwritten type
product line
with safety nets, right?
And I absolutely agree with that, is that you can't have no ability for an insurance company to be able to figure out how best to insure people or what that ought to cost. You can't go in there blind. I mean, it's nonsensical. Nobody could run a business that way.
We can do it with safety nets that can help people, right? So we want to make sure everybody can get the coverage. So
well, and for centuries, how we used to provide for the care of the poor was through charities. You know, a lot of churches did that. They sponsored hospitals and whatnot. I think there's a lot of ways we could cover people, and probably a whole lot cheaper than what the system is currently doing, especially judging from our earlier conversation. You alerted us to a bill that the Democrats are trying to slip into this session, SB 1528B. In essence, because Oregonians will be getting a tax cut from the feds, but upper-income earners will have to pay more thanks to Oregon's health high income taxes that you can only deduct $10,000 off of your tax bill. But now Oregon Democrats have come up with a new way to get money, except that this scheme will only benefit the wealthy. Tell us what you know about this bill.
So basically, in taxes Trump package, pass-through entities, so LLCs, S-Corps, sole providers, we bring in money through our businesses, but it passes through to our individual tax return. So in that pass-through, we may not be paying Social Security or Medicare taxes, but we are paying state and fed. Well, he had given, I believe it was a 14% tax break to C-Corps. So to level the playing field, the tax proposal that was passed gives a 20% deduction for anybody with pass-through income. So if you have pass-through income of, say, $50,000, you're going to get a deduction of $10,000 or 20%, and then you'll pay taxes on the remaining 40. That's at the federal level. What Senate Bill 1528 is going to do is take that away. So any small business or sole proprietor in Oregon will not get that 20% tax deduction that the feds tried to give us. When we go to pay our state taxes, not our federal, but our state, the state of Oregon will gross back up our pass-through income by that 20% and taxes on the whole thing. And they call these pass-through entities suits and scrubs because they assume it's all lawyers and doctors, and they forget that it's small business owners like myself or that guy that's laying your brickwork for your home or your carpet or installing your cabinets or doing your landscaping.
Or farmers. Or
that farmer who's providing food. So there's lots of small businesses in Oregon. We have a huge, per capita, and so this is affecting a lot of small businesses if this goes through. And Senate Bill 1528, please, please reach out to your senator. Tell them that you do not want this. We need to protect our small business owners here in Oregon.
Absolutely. And, it just gets down to, it seems anyway, that the Democrats just don't like people keeping their own money. It's just one more way to recapture money. NFIB has also issued an alert on this, which we'll post on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page. They're estimating that this is going to raise taxes on small business owners by $1 billion. Now, the other side of this is that they are giving a tax cut, or tax credit anyway, to upper income earners. And they're allowing an auction of some of these tax credits. Anyway, that was part of their original proposal. Is that still in there as well?
I'm not 100% sure. I know that there was some other language about, taxing or taking kind of the cap off and taxing people that were at $250,000 or higher at a higher tax rate. There was an additional $50 tax credit going back to Oregonians. A lot of that's all been removed. Supposedly right now, Senate Bill 1528, that bill specifically is trying to disconnect Oregon from that 20% deduction for pass-through income for small business owners.
Wow.
So I do know, and heard about the other piece. I don't know if that's a different piece of legislation or it's not part of 1528 anymore. But I just want people to realize the state of Oregon is trying to take away that 20% deduction you were hoping to get on your state tax bill for pass-through income. And we need our small businesses. That's our job creators. And Oregon just seems to constantly make it more and more difficult for our small businesses.
Absolutely. And I think it's an absolute myth that Democrats are saying that they're for small business owners. That is simply not true. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been extremely informative.
Thank you. Again, thank you for always having me back. I enjoy our talks.
Before we go, I'll leave you with this. Despite what you hear from Democrats, health care is not a right. Anything that someone else has to provide for you is not a human right. There are rumors that Democrat Governor Kate Brown is pushing things like universal health care, the carbon tax, and others because national Democrats want to see her in a Democrat administration. Just imagine if Hillary had won, Kate Brown and her ideas unleashed on a national level. Be thankful. And let's get her out. Speaking of that, we're interviewing Greg Wooldridge next week. He is a conservative and a former Blue Angels commander who's running for governor. I don't think you'll want to miss that. Thank you for joining us. Let us know what you thought. Check out our website. Follow me on Twitter at iSpy Radio. and help us spread the word, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.